This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison. It isn't exactly breaking news that the pandemic has been a stressful, anxiety-inducing time for many Americans. But now, as we approach the end of a second year of home, work, and school lives being launched into turmoil, mental health care providers are getting a sense of just how extensive the need for care has become and the strain that need may put on our system for the future. Joining us to share some information on what's happening and what we may need to be doing about it is Dr. Vail Wright. She's a licensed psychologist and senior director of healthcare innovation at the American Psychological Association. Dr. Wright, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And here to bring some local perspective is Dr. Arnie Abels. He's director and clinical coordinator of the Counseling, Health, Testing, and Disability Services here at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Dr. Abels, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Dr. Wright, let me start with you. A lot of what we know about how things are going comes from a national survey of practitioners that the American Psychological Association took a few months into the pandemic and then took again earlier this year. As you look over the results, how bad is it?
It's frankly pretty bad. Mm-hmm. We're seeing just a whole group of psychologists saying that they're working more, they're seeing more patients, that their workload is at capacity, and that, as not much of a surprise, that they're also more stressed and more likely to report feeling burned out. So we have probably a very unsustainable system right now.
Of all of those findings, what stood out to you the most as the most surprising between early 2020, just after the pandemic was really becoming understood, and now towards the end of this year?
I don't know if it's surprising, but I think for me, one of the big takeaways is how consistent the data has been over the last year and a half of really pointing to what seems to be a mental health crisis in mm-hmm. this country. That data from the CDC, from Johns Hopkins, and what we're seeing at APA all point to individuals saying that they are more depressed, more anxious, that they're using more substances, and that suicidal ideation has increased. And these are really frightening statistics. And again, seems to be across the board. It's not just an anomaly. This is really what's happening in this country right now.
Are you able to measure whether that sort of hit a peak and then is getting better now as the world opens up a little more, or is it still trending pretty badly?
It still seems to be trending upward. I don't see it coming down yet. Stress levels have sort of waxed and waned a little bit over the last year and a half. But even in our most recent Stress in America survey, what we found was stress levels were still relatively high, independent of whether or not someone had received the vaccine yet. So it wasn't just that things are opening up, that the vaccine is available. There's still a lot of uncertainty about what the future is going to look like. And that's really what's driving stress levels.
So we're talking today about the impact not only on mental health of the population in general, but on the system and on the mental health care providers. Dr. Abels, does what Dr. Wright has described nationally, does that match your experience here treating UMKC students and staff? Does it seem to be true in our area?
Thank you. So specifically, our center only serves students. And I would say that we have seen an increase in, generically, an increase in students accessing services with us. Although, unfortunately, I'm not able to specifically identify percentages because part of our process is referring students to other entities. But we have experienced increases in a number of different areas for sure. For example, the Center for Collegiate Mental Health did a wonderful step in creating some additional questions on generic paperwork in the 2020 and 2021 academic years associated with COVID-19. And of the students that have accessed services from the start of our fiscal year, which is August 1st, last year we had about 68% of our students indicated that COVID had impacted their mental health, and about 67% this year have indicated that COVID has impacted their mental health, as well as other key areas of why students are at college. So academic performance, for example, 57% of our new students accessing services with us has indicated COVID has impacted that, as well as 35% believe that their career outlook is also impacted.
And are those higher percentages than you would see in a typical year? Obviously, college can be a stressful time, even in the best of circumstances.
Sure. Great question. So these questions were only generated in the 2020 year after the start of COVID. All of them, except for the mental health impact, which is about the same, have actually increased. So the academic issues have increased about 8% this year, and career outlook has increased about 3% this year. Generally speaking, the primary issues that our students come in with are anxiety slash stress. Secondly is depression. And then thirdly is relationship issues of some type, with anxiety, stress being around 70% of our students. That is one of their top presenting concerns. Depression is about 65% of our students, and relationship issues about 60%.
Dr. Wright, I am curious. You know, we hear all those numbers. We hear these broad categories of areas of mental health concern. Did the pandemic tend to cause new mental health issues, or did it tend to exacerbate problems that were already there? Help us get behind those numbers a little bit.
Yeah, it's likely both. It's likely that those who were maybe already struggling with a mental health disorder, the stress of the pandemic made it worse, the isolation made it worse, the financial situation. I mean, there's a compounding amount of stressors in addition to the pandemic.
Yeah.
We also have evidence that there are individuals seeking out treatment for the first time as well, as a result, again, of all these stressors related to the pandemic. So I would argue that it's probably both.
And I guess part of the question, not to make this overly simple, but is that good news or bad news? Which is to say, is there something about the pandemic that caused people who maybe needed treatment before to actually go get it in a way that they weren't doing before?
I think there's two things. I think one is the pandemic has absolutely shined a light on the importance of mental health, and that it's as important as our physical health in a way that I don't think we were really dialoguing about pre-pandemic. I think the second big takeaway from the pandemic has been the pivot to being able to use telehealth in a really effective way to increase access to individuals who maybe would not have sought out treatment before for a variety of the barriers, not just cost, but also not being able to maybe travel to get to a therapist, having to take off work, having to find childcare. Being able to use video conferencing and audio only really does address some of those barriers. Now, it highlighted new barriers as well, including specifically, you know, lack of access to the internet or devices. But I think those are the big takeaways that I'm hoping to see from the pandemic, is the continued dialogue about the importance of mental health and the continued ability to use telehealth as a way to increase access to care.
Dr. Abels, you serve a population of students who are already using technology and video conferencing for their academic life and probably a lot of other kinds of communication as well. Did that have an impact on the services you were able to provide in the area of mental health care?
Yes, it has actually a very positive impact. Prior to COVID, we had not used telehealth therapy services before, but with the support of a wonderful staff that hit the ground running once students were required to only be remote and school was remote, that along with our technology system here at UMKC, we implemented a HIPAA-compatible Zoom platform, and actually the bulk of our sessions currently and since that time have been done using telehealth.
We'd love to hear from our listeners right now. If you have observed or experienced mental health care issues or concerns, or perhaps new forms of treatment during the pandemic, we'd love to hear from you about the impact that this time has had and the opportunities and challenges it has afforded. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. We'd also love to hear from mental health care providers, if you're listening, about what these last 18 months have been like for you. 816-235-2888, or you can tweet at us. We're at KCUR up to date. Dr. Wright, you mentioned telehealth as one of those innovations. I note that your title is you're the senior director for healthcare innovation at the APA. What other innovations emerged during this season as a way of providing a different kind of mental health care?
Yeah, we've seen a real explosion of both venture capital, but also utilization of digital health tools. So those can be, you know, either the direct-to-consumer downloadable apps from the app store that focus on things like mindfulness or better sleep habits, but also the use of software as a way to deliver psychological treatments. So I think those are some of the innovations that we're going to see coming. One of the challenges is that when you have innovative treatments, we don't have an innovative reimbursement or regulatory system. And so you hear a clash where you create new research, new products, but we don't really have a way to A, pay for them or to ensure that they're both safe and efficacious. So I think it's there's a tension there between wanting to increase access using technology and other innovative ways to meet people where they're at, while also ensuring that we're protecting people and making sure that providers and others can get paid for doing it.
I would think that just a little stroll through the App Store on your smartphone tells you that it's kind of a wild, wild west for self-help sorts of apps, right?
It absolutely is. And I mean, I think that's really challenging then for consumers to be able to wade through all the noise and to figure out what actually would be effective and what wouldn't be. We often recommend using these apps in as an adjunctive along with a provider who can help you navigate that space. But again, we're not going to address the mental health issue by just having everybody work with a mental health provider. There's just not enough in the workforce to be able to do that. And so we need to think about how can we meet people in different ways.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, Dr. Abels. I mean, we've been hearing and we saw in this survey from the APA that the workload for mental health care providers is way up. The length of wait lists for providers to actually see patients is up. How are you dealing with that at UMKC?
So I would say that at the beginning of the semester, we did experience a significant increase in wait times for initial appointments. That has persisted a little bit, although around this time is historically been the most intense time for our center in terms of students accessing services. So we have dealt with it in a number of ways. We have really appreciated our adjunct service here at UMKC through the School of Education and this counseling psychology, clinical psychology program called the Community Counseling and Assessment Services that has actually offered to mirror services that we provide to students. And we are referring low-risk students to those providers to assist with. We are also using group types of formats in terms of our Mind Over Mood workshop series. It's a 3-week sequential workshop that assists students in developing coping skills, not just for one type of mental health issue, but a variety of different types of things, such as depression, anxiety, stress, grief, loss, etc. And then we are looking at where possible to spread sessions out a little bit farther than normally we do in terms of helping students give them a chance to see kind of what they've been working on in sessions to see how it is working in their day-to-day life.
Let's take a question from Ray. Ray, thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call today. Yeah, my name is Ray Bowerman. I'm a psychotherapist here in the Kansas City area. My pronouns are they, them. And my focus is on gender, sex, and sexuality with a trauma-informed approach. I have noticed that with my patients, depending on what they're presenting with and why they'd like to see me, telehealth is definitely on the table for them, or definitely not. Or at least that's how they've sort of come to it initially. Once in-person sessions became an option again, I found that a lot of people really wanted that. And so doing masked and distance things once people were vaccinated was really something that people wanted again. Mm-hmm. Having that telehealth option, though, it's been great to be able to say, hey, let's do this, or I'm not feeling well, but I still want to keep my session. Can we do this over telehealth?
Ray, you think you're going to see patients who actually prefer meeting by telehealth in the future, even when it's not a public health issue?
You know what? For the people that I see, I find that more want in person, actually. And this is just, I'll just speak for myself. I found that if distance and traveling is a therapist in Kansas, I find that I have some people that are kind of out there as far as distance. And they find me and they say, hey, driving 2 hours isn't really an option. So can we do telehealth? Barring those outliers, I really find that people like to meet in person at this point, but knowing that telehealth is an option is a really sort of comforting thing, okay, I think, for a lot of people.
Interesting. I appreciate that, Ray. Thanks so much for the call. And Dr. Wright, let me ask you if that matches what you're hearing from other therapists across the country. Are people who maybe even did take advantage of telehealth and needed it now eager to get back to in-person treatments?
We have seen over the last year that psychologists are reporting that they're shifting to more of a hybrid model. So at the start of the pandemic, About 96% of psychologists said that they were seeing everybody remotely. And now it's about half. So I think that we do see individual differences when it comes to whether or not telehealth is the best option for you. I think it's the flexibility part that's really critical. And I think that it can address some of the access barriers, like that was just mentioned by the caller, in regards to having to travel, or if you maybe have a disability and you're unable to be as mobile as you would like to be. I think the telehealth is a critical option for people to have going forward. And we know that it's efficacious. We do know that even pre-pandemic, we had the research that said that telehealth was just as effective as face-to-face. But what we don't know is in which circumstances and for which person and under which conditions, right? So while generally we know it's very effective, there are going to be people where it doesn't probably work as well for.
And you're still figuring out who those people are.
Yes, that's where I'm hoping the research will go. I think, again, to one of the earlier points, you know, the pandemic has really been a catalyst for the expansion of telehealth in a way that it would not have happened if the pandemic hadn't occurred. And so I think that opens up doors for more nuanced research about what is it that we need to know in order to continue that continuity of care, make sure that we're increasing access and that people are getting the best forms of therapy that they can get.
Yeah, I do want to ask, were all mental health care providers equally adept at making the shift to a more tech-savvy approach to therapy?
No, I would say not. I think that just like the rest of the population, you had varying levels of comfort with technology and access to that technology. But what we did at APA was really tried to very quickly pivot to provide some resources for how to help individuals, providers really make that move to telehealth, how to identify platforms that are appropriate, how to ensure that you have safety plans in place in case the crisis occurs. How do you have the right kinds of informed consent with your patient to help them understand how telehealth works? And so I think that what we've seen in the research that in our survey, that over time, providers have reported that they've gotten more comfortable. Patients have reported that they've been more comfortable. And so I think it's been successful.
We're talking about mental health care during the pandemic and about the mental health care system and providers and the impact that the pandemic has had on them. We're talking with Dr. Vail Wright, who's a licensed psychologist and senior director of healthcare innovation at the American Psychological Association, and also with Dr. Arnie Abels, who directs the counseling, health testing, and disability services here at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Dr. Abels, one of the things that the APA survey assessed wasn't just how patients or clients are doing, but how the providers themselves are doing with all this. I'm curious about your own experiences here locally. How are you, how are your staff doing with what is obviously a more stressful time that affects providers as well as patients?
Thank you. That's a very important part, and we're really trying to focus on elements of self-care, really monitoring kind of the flow of clients and how caseloads are looking for each individual therapist, really inviting their voice in terms of their ability to take on new clients and the types of clients, given there's a difference between level of severity of certain clients, while, again, collectively working to meet the comprehensive needs here of our student population at UMKC. So really taking steps to encourage taking leave time, taking breaks, taking lunch, getting out of the office, setting boundaries, a wide range of things.
Dr. Wright, on a national level, in all kinds of different therapeutic settings, are you finding the same thing? Is this as tough a time as we have seen for mental health care providers?
Certainly from the survey, we saw that certain groups do seem to be more vulnerable to the stresses of the workforce right now. And those are female psychologists, those who identify as ethnic minority and younger or earlier in their career stage are generally the ones reporting higher levels of stress and being more likely to burn out.
Can you speculate as to why that is?
Well, so younger adults often have report higher levels of stress in general, in part because younger adults may have just less resilience than older individuals because they just haven't had to overcome as many adversities and don't have the same level of coping skills. It could also be that, you know, younger adults, and we know women are particularly stressed by the workforce right now because of external stressors, right? Having to take care of kids during the pandemic, and the different types of just life stages that they are compared to older adults. So those are probably some of the reasons that we're seeing higher levels of burnout. And, you know, in a caring profession, burnout is common. That's just sort of how it is. So I think, you know, the points that Dr. Abels was making about ensuring that providers have control over their schedule and that they're encouraged to take breaks and take care of themselves are the ways to really prevent that burnout.
I know telling someone to take care of themselves, telling them to not work so much, does not always result in that actually happening.
No, absolutely not. That's why you have to pay attention to the environment too, right? So you need to ask yourself, how do I create an environment or a work situation around myself that really does help me enforce boundaries, that enables me to take those breaks? So it can't just be, you know, taking bubble baths and ensuring in self-care. It's got to be both the individual and the environmental controls that you put into place.
I'm curious from both of you, how much strain do you feel like this is putting on the system? Has there been enough care to go around? Is it just sort of, this is going to be a rough time, but we're going to get through it? Or are there some systemic changes that need to happen in the system because this isn't going away? Dr. Wright?
So unfortunately, we knew before the pandemic that we had an access to care gap. We do not have enough providers in the workforce to meet the needs of everybody with mental health and behavioral health issues. And that's only been exacerbated since the pandemic. So I think that we need to really approach the system with a whole new outlook around population health and preventative health. Like I said before, we can't expect to address the mental health needs by putting everybody in a 45-minute individual therapy session. That's just not going to be effective. So we need to think about, how do we meet people where they're at? How do we use innovative technologies to address this gap? And how do we think about preventative issues in a way that we think about prevention with physical health?
Dr. Abels, at UMKC or other communities you're part of here, are you seeing some potential for recovery or future strain on the system?
I think for right now, it's going to be a continued strain. I'm sure articles have, you've read articles just about the impact on university counseling centers with increased demand, increased severity, lack of staff. Last week, an article came out in the Chronicle of Higher Education that highlighted a significant exodus of providers from university settings in counseling services just because of the stress and strain and workload that folks are experiencing. From a personal standpoint, in terms of operating a small private practice in the community here, I know that I get many calls from folks looking for providers, and that there are heavy wait lists from what I'm hearing from other providers in the Kansas City community, where they have wait lists that could mirror, you know, 4 to 6 weeks even.
Wow. So, which, if you're dealing with a mental health crisis in your life, that's an extraordinarily long time.
It is, very much so. Positively, here at UMKC, we have walk-in crisis times every day. We've actually never closed. We've always been open throughout the entire pandemic, where we had a physical presence here of staff member on site, that if anybody did need in-person services, we were always available since the onset of COVID.
Dr. Wright, you mentioned earlier that you think one of the positive outcomes of all this has been that people became more aware of the reality of the need for mental health care at times. Do you feel like that is going to be the new normal, quote unquote, or do you feel like there will be a reversion to sort of putting mental health care on the back burner in a lot of people's way of thinking about their own lives?
I'm certainly hopeful that the dialogue will continue, but it's going to really depend, again, on systemic changes and whether they revert back to how things were in the past, meaning that we aren't able to access telehealth as readily as we can now, or whether the system just continues to treat mental health as something different than physical health, as opposed to two things that are interrelated. So I don't think that we can, again, solve this as on an individual level. We have to create real long sustaining systemic change, and I'm still hopeful that the pandemic has been a catalyst for that.
Dr. Abels, would you say the same?
I would. I would also add that I believe that mental health is a universal responsibility for all of us. We here at the Counseling Services obviously are identified as mental health professionals on campus, but we really want to support faculty, staff, and our student body to help recognize students that may be having a difficult time, getting them referred to our office as quickly as possible, offering an online program called Ask, Listen, Refer that actually is available to anyone free online, that actually helps folks understand kind of what questions to ask somebody if they're concerned about their mental health and how to help them get to the help that they need.
So with just the 30 seconds we have left, maybe one sentence from each of you. If a person is listening and needs to do a little quick self-check-in, what's the question they should be asking themselves right now about whether they should be seeking some sort of further help with their own mental health? Dr. Wright?
You know, often we tell people as soon as, you know, the red flag is that you start to interfere with your functioning. You're unable to go to school. You're unable to go to work. You can't take care of yourself anymore. That's when you need to seek out care. I want to encourage people to do it way before that. Just right. Even if you think that you could potentially receive some assistance by talking to somebody, reach out and do that. Go to an online locator like Psychology Today. Plug in your information and find a provider.
All right. And I'm going to let that be the last word, if you don't mind, Dr. Abels. We're out of time. Dr. Arnie Abels is Director and Clinical Coordinator of the Counseling, Health, Testing, and Disability Services at UMKC. Dr. Vale Wright is with the American Psychological Association. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And in for Steve Kraske, I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.